we look at them as superheroes. And then we pretend like superheroes, like we do in the movies, aren't actually human. Except for the real ones really are.
This week, House Bill 23, First Responder Mental Health Services Amendments, unanimously passed the House Law Enforcement and Criminal Justice Committee and was heard on the House floor for full consideration of the body. Representative Ryan Wilcox, the bill's sponsor, is with us today to discuss the legislation and its importance to all first responders throughout the state. Representative Wilcox, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for letting me talk today.
So mental health is something that has been talked about a lot more frequently over the past several years. We know that mental health issues affect countless individuals in some way or the other, including our first responders and their families. Can you share with us a little bit more about the background on this issue and how you came to realize its significance for our first responder community?
Yeah, I was caught totally off guard, honestly, by this when it all started. I started just out by doing my homework, having a conversation with my local law enforcement. And one of the first things I heard as I had these conversations around the state was, one, bail reform wasn't working. We had to address bail reform. And so we expressed that out of the gate. That was very clear, came up in every meeting. The one that I really wasn't prepared for was the officer wellness conversation. What mental health issues were, how they were affecting our force, some of the data. It was so, in fact, it was frankly more compelling than the bail issue. As we started looking at the studies that had been done, and in detail in Ogden, we had about a third of our department that was actively at risk. And many were in lack of a coherent program, an intentional recognition of the burden that we had placed on our officers, and a treatment program that was actually helping to take care of those things. The fallout was disastrous. So,
and is that fairly emblematic of what we're seeing statewide as well?
Yeah, it's nationwide. It's not just statewide. Like this is, and talk about what had happened that previous year through the 2020 cycle, the pressures on law enforcement, and goodness gracious, in Ogden, there was a murder of a police officer. Nate Lighty was killed, two blocks from my house? Right? Like, so we all, at least in that part of the state, we were particularly sensitive to that. Part of that conversation was the realization that we had lost, I think, five officers after Nate was killed, Officer Lighty was killed, not because they couldn't do it anymore, but because of the burden it had placed on their families, because their spouses couldn't do it anymore. So it started this much deeper, longer series of conversations instead of just, hey, tell me about what's going on in law enforcement, what's happening in your agency, what do you need, what's working, what's not working, into far more in-depth discussions that were an objective person would describe as rather painful to have, because they involved, in almost every case, very personal details about things that had happened in very long careers. So like even our very experienced veterans were telling me stories about something that happened in 1983 that they hadn't dealt with yet and didn't know how to talk about with their family members. And just some of the most heartbreaking things, from horrible accidents to suicide calls they'd been called on. One conversation, and this is fairly recent, there was a major accident here a month or so ago in the southern part of the state on I-15 with some horrible weather and a 17-car crash. And anyway, in that case, we had a veteran officer who was tasked with pulling a deceased child out of the vehicle that happened to be the same age as his own son. So just that, for a veteran, the simple human things that they go through on every shift. And that is the stuff that's just the routine stuff that we ask these guys to do. Some of the data I started to reference a minute ago suggests that on an average shift, most officers will have 3 to 4 potentially traumatic injuries situations that they need to address. Our firefighters, when we dug into that, could be higher. we just, for culturally, for forever, we have treated these men and women as something that they're not. We look at them as superheroes because of what they do, because we see it. And then we pretend like superheroes, like we do in the movies, aren't actually human. Except for the real ones really are, right? So it's been very sobering. And the more I had these conversations, the more I looked at how many were at risk, how many first responders were self-medicating with alcohol, the divorce rates. I start digging into what's the actual fallout for the families. Guys, it's 75%. You are more likely than not to have a failed marriage as a result of choosing this career. That has to end. And, you know, those stories keep coming in as we go.
Can you talk to this bill and how specifically this will help alleviate some of those main stressors that are foisted upon these workers and how we can best help them in the discharge of their duties?
Thank you. Yeah. So the legislation tries to do, really before anything else, is to lay out what the state policy is and should be for how we care for not just our first responders, but their families and retirees. So the first part of that is regular screenings that by default that we are checking in on you. You know, I mentioned the Ogden case. When we started doing that, we learned quite a bit from that first round. And what we found the first round is that if we didn't make it mandatory, which they didn't at first, okay, they didn't make the screenings mandatory, they had a much lower participation rate because nobody wants to go in and admit potentially that I need help or I'm struggling, especially in a culture where you are the guardian. And it's hard to admit that you need help generally. So a lot of officers just wouldn't do it. So we make these required. And that's how Ogden handled it, is finally the chief came down and said, okay, this is a condition of your employment kind of conversation. And that's how we got those screenings implemented. And once that happened, and this was just everybody has to do this, it's part of working here, we understood, we started finally to get into the real data about, you know, who needed help and how we needed to treat them. The second part that is an important part of this that seeks to address that is that we keep it anonymized, meaning we're not requiring our officers, our first responders in general, we don't want them to go tell the chief. We only need the chief to know which officers, you know, said they were struggling. What we care about as a state is making sure that everybody, that those officers, when they need to talk to somebody, when they need more intensive intervention, that they have immediate access to it. So the first part is the regular screenings. The second part is, and this is, there's some debate about this, about whether we've been too aggressive or in timeline or not, is that we put a 12-hour clock on it so that when we know that an officer has been involved in a traumatic situation. And so this is, you know, they're fairly obvious, but severe. I mentioned some of them, severe car accidents, you know, shootings, obviously, anything at all involved in intense violent situations, that they're contacted by a professional therapist within 12 hours of the incident.
So one of the critical problems we have seen, both as a nation and as a state over the last several years, is a severe lack of individuals who are both looking to go into a career as a first responder, as well as the long-term retention of these workers. As you've noted, there are some deeper issues here that are really affecting retention among our ranks. And this bill seems to really get at those underlying and oft-neglected parts of the recruiting and retention issue. Can you speak to how this bill will affect our overall readiness and responsiveness among our first responder ranks?
Yeah, and you know, I think this is, choosing to be a first responder is different than any other career, any other life choice, right? Generally because you can make a lot more money doing something else, like teaching in that way, right? Public service in general. But specifically with first responders, we have a lot of these guys that I've added to this bill that I initially wouldn't, again, have considered are volunteers. They are literally doing this for free. Right, so our search and rescue teams. I've been friends with several of those in my neighborhood, and frankly, one of my good friends here on the Hill, Representative Snyder, you know, is a volunteer firefighter, right? And I've had the conversation with him about stories that he goes on and EMS runs, and he does all this stuff. He doesn't do it for money. He's a volunteer. he wears the pager, right? And he goes out and I don't want to embarrass Casey or anything, but you know, he's awesome at what he does. Like, you go into his office, you're going to see like Firefighter of the Year awards on his, in his little desk thing. Right. We've talked about suicides that he's come up on and things that he has carried around. And so it's not lost on me that, you know, recruiting and retention has many facets. Some of it is compensation. I ran legislation last year to make sure our wildlife officers were compensated equivalent to what we offer other state law enforcement officers, right? For some reason, they got left out of the pay plan, which is not cool. Anyway, so I'm working on that issue still, but that's a small part of it, because they're largely driven by a larger calling to what they're doing. They really do want to help. And so when they start in this career, which is for most, if not all of them, very much a calling kind of an opportunity to serve and to try to protect and, you know, all the things that you sign up for when you choose something like this, to make sure that isn't going to have additional really catastrophic cost to your family is... not just we're now delving clearly into moral territory, right? So I do think it could help long term. I hope it helps long term with that, at least the peace of mind part of it, so that when families are considering this, when young men and women are considering whether or not they want to go into this, whether or not it's worth it, knowing that the media is probably going to lambast you as much as they can in the papers if you ever make a mistake, right? They're just inherent risks that we accept. But that is knowing that you will be taken care of and that you have access to the care that you need to protect your own family, I hope is an incentive to stay and to serve.
Thank you, Representative. Is there anything else as we start to wrap up here that you would like to communicate to members of the public, or specifically members of the first responder community, as this bill goes through?
It's probably come across in the tone of this, but as we delve into this, I almost want to apologize, right? Like, not because I've done anything necessarily, but because we have let this go for so long without some of these things in place. It's difficult to make these changes, and change is always hard anyway, but to understand the need for it and to be willing to buck the system the way it has been, knowing that there's something better that we can do and that helps all of us. There is one piece, I suppose, that we didn't talk about. There's a $5 million appropriation request, and that's not arbitrary. Frankly, we need about 10, okay, to really do this. And so we're going for what we think we can get here. But this is... and especially for our rural, our smaller agencies, we've restricted that or prioritized the funding out of that $5 million for counties of the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th class and cities of the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th class. I think of my local ones, North Ogden, Harrisville, and Pleasant View, right? Or down south, you have so many, right, that we've talked about already, but helping them to get these programs started. At the end of the day, it's going to require all of us, depending upon the state to provide this, but a commitment from our city councils, from our counties, from everybody that has responsibility for this to make sure that we implement the policy.
Thank you, Representative. We appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing this bill as it continues to move through the process and can get the help to those first responders that so desperately needs.
Thank you.